Meeting will come to order, please. This is the House Finance Committee meeting. It is Friday, May 7th, approximately 2:50 in the afternoon. Members who are present at this time, Representatives Foster, myself, Terrio, Co-Chairman Mulder, Coin, Osterman, and Grusendorf. Before we get started today, I would like people to notice that we have placed by each of your file boxes resumes for appointees to the Alcohol Beverage Control Board and the Governor's, yeah, just the Alcohol Beverage Control Board. I would like members to please look over the resumes. If you find something that you have a question on and would like to schedule a meeting to go over the qualifications, we will do that. Otherwise, we will just report them back to the Rules Committee for action when we get to confirmation hearing. So if you please take a look at those. We have two items on the schedule for today. I would like to take up House Bill 167 first. We have Representative Cowdery, who is the prime sponsor here, along with staff.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Peter Culperson, Staff Representative Cowdery. I'll just briefly review the bill and then attempt to answer any questions. Mr. Chairman, as originally drafted, House Bill 67 would have merely relieved small used mobile home dealers from the burdensome bonding licensure requirements of existing law. Since used dealers market mobile homes with no warranty, this made sense. However, the Urban Commerce Committee heard considerable testimony on the bill and resolved that the entire licensure structure, while implemented with good intentions, really didn't serve a meaningful public process commensurate with its cost to private business. It is worth noting, Mr. Chairman, that not one claim has ever been made against a licensee or their bond under the existing law. Indeed, it is difficult to find any compelling reason for regulating mobile home dealers at all. There are third-party stores of irresponsible sales agents, but these aren't the ones who can afford a bond or are willing to comply with the licensing requirement. The existing laws like gun control. Only honest citizens comply, and they're not the problem. We are informed, Mr. Chairman, that most mobile home dealers are relatively small operators. To them, the cost, or perhaps unavailability of bonding, can mean the difference between staying in business or going out of business. It can mean the difference between operating a legitimate business or one that merely exists on the margins. Surely it is a worthy goal to protect small business and promote a vibrant community of competition. That's what this bill does. Mr. Chairman, there are those opposed to this measure. They argue that protections are needed, that regulation is better for business. In some cases, it seems that the regulation is better for their business, but not for our business. If the current statutes suppress competition with burdensome bonding fees, then surely someone will be in favor of the status quo. We are not. House Bill 167 relieves small business. In fact, it relieves all businesses at no ascertainable risk to consumer protection. I'd be happy to answer any questions. And thank you.
Other questions for Peter? Seeing that we do have, thank you. If you want to stay there, that would be fine. We do have in Anchorage, Gail Kincaid. Ms. Kincaid, are you on the line?
Yeah.
Mr. Kincaid, I'm sorry. And I'm sorry to keep you waiting. We're getting to the time of the year where our schedule is very much in flux all the time. Did you have testimony today? I'm sorry, or just available to answer questions?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. My name is Gail Kincaid. I'm the owner and operator of Triad Sales Company Anchorage for the past 10 years. I ask your support of House Bill 167. I do not believe a bond is needed when we know about that as a dealer or protection to the consumer. The bond does help reduce competition because most small dealers cannot obtain the bond and afford the bond. They cannot qualify for financing of the bond. Currently, state law does not enforce House Bill 346, and many dealers today are forced to operate without a bond. I ask for your support for this bill again. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Cowdery has joined us. Representative Cowdery, do you have comments?
Yes, Gail, have you ever heard in your 10 years anybody complaining, have any complaints of that went against anybody for any of the licensed or unlicensed dealers that's in your organization?
Representative Cowdery, I've been doing this 35 years in Triad Sales. You've been with only for 10 years. Never had a complaint. I never heard of a complaint on a lawsuit against a used mobile home dealer. A new dealer, the factory backed up their warranty, so they had problems the factory paid for it. And a new dealer is financially able to expand it, you know, $1 million on their credit, which used dealers can't.
Representative Cowdery?
Yeah, thank you. Do you work any of your sales on your used sale, or is it done on an as-is, where is it? Could you explain how that works?
Well, All of our paperwork from the first credit money write-up is as is, whereas no warranty intended implied. It's all used mobile home sales by all used mobile home dealers. There's no way anybody come against a used dealer because there's nothing warranted. It never has happened. It can't happen. There's no liability there.
Thank you.
Questions for Mr. Kincaid? Representative Davies?
That's enough, Mr. Spencer.
Any other questions for Mr. Kincaid? If not, is there anyone else in the audience that wishes to testify on 167? Representative Davies, did you have a question for the prime sponsor?
This only applies to used sales.
No.
Representative Davies, Mr. Chairman. Now, as I went into Labor and Commerce, we were just going to address the used issue. Once we got into the issue and the Labor and Commerce Committee heard the testimony, saw that there's only 14 licensees now, if we took used out, there'd only be four new ones left, and that's just too small of a group to support. Because it has to be self-supporting, a licensure group, their fees have to support the entire structure, the cost for that licensee group. The division felt that it was just, at that point, meaningless to even retain the law. There was no consumer protection request. There's no consumers calling for protection. There just didn't seem to be a reason to have that.
Okay, are there any other questions? Okay, and I don't see anyone else to testify. Are there amendments to come before the committee on the bill? Representative Mulder?
Mr. Chairman, if there are no amendments, I would move that we pass House Bill 167 from committee with individual recommendations and accompanying fiscal note.
Faster, you didn't move fast enough.
I want to move a little bit here.
Is there objection to the motion? There is the 1-0 fiscal note. And seeing no objection, then the bill will move from committee with individual recommendations.
Is it for 5 minutes?
Next, we have House Prepared Resolution Number 10. The committee members should have a proposed CS. Is that been handed out already, or is it being handed out? Backslash K is the proposed House Finance CS. I would need a Representative Davies.
I'm going to adopt K, but can somebody explain the differences?
Yes. If you look on the URS version of the bill, whereas that starts on page 1, line 12 through 15 has been deleted. On the second page,
URS?
Yeah, I'm just highlighting the differences between the URS version and the proposed finance CS. And under on the second page,
I'm sorry, could you say that first one again? I just got with you here.
Yes.
Page 1, line 12 through 15, that whereas has been deleted.
Oh, yeah.
Then on the second page, the line in the 9 has been replaced with new language, a new section 2, sub 2. And an additional further resolved has been added. So there has been a motion to adopt the K version as the working document before the committee. Is there objection to that?
Object.
There is objection from Representative Osterman. Representative Osterman, would you like to speak to your objection?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, I'd like to address each one of these issues separately and want to remove a section out of the original bill. We could adopt the original bill and make a motion to remove it. And same thing by adding a section that you're going to do.
Okay. We could do it either way. My pleasure is that we do adopt the CS and the back end. That could be an amendment, but I understand that it would be your desire that we not do that. I still would like the committee to consider adopting the finance CS.
Chair, I'll remove my objection.
Okay. Then is there any other objection? The finance CS then is the working document before us. We will take public testimony. We have, first of all, we'll go to the teleconference.
Oh, good.
We have in Kodiak, Mr. Walter Sapp with Kodiak Electric Association. Mr. Sapp, are you online?
Yes, I am.
Okay. Do you want to go ahead and give us your testimony, please?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman and committee members, my name is Walter Sapp, and I'm the president of the board of directors of the Kodiak Electric Association. I'm also the treasurer of the Ford M. Hoo Project Management Committee. I want to thank you for allowing me to speak to you this afternoon in support of the CS4 House Concurrent Resolution Number 10. The sale of these projects to the communities they serve will provide long-term economic stability to Kodiak and all the other communities that belong to the Ford Dam Pool.
Kind of a nod.
Utilities served by the Ford Dam Pool are either a cooperative or a municipal. This means that 100% of all savings will remain with the people in the state of Alaska. I encourage you to pass this resolution and begin the process that will allow the utility to provide a stable economic base in 8 Alaskan communities. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Sapp. The CS that the committee is working off does have a couple of changes I wanted to ask you about. We have added language that the authority is to give due consideration to the prospective purchaser's commitment to Alaska Hire, Alaska Contracting, and participation by Alaskans. Would you have any problem with that language being included?
No, I would not.
Okay. In addition, with regards to the power sales agreements, we have added a resolve that asks the Alaska Energy Authority to evaluate any methods by which a private sector interest may be able to participate. To do so, though, they would have to honor the existing power sales agreements and indemnify the state of Alaska for its current ownership liabilities. And that is an additional resolve, just asking for the Alaska Energy Authority to evaluate that. And if there is a proposed sale to the utilities that comes back, I believe we are going to be faced with the question again of whether private interests can participate or whether they are barred from participation because of the rating of the power sales agreements. I think until we get that question resolved, there's a number of members of the legislature that are going to be very leery of going ahead with a sale to the communities. And so the resolve that's been added asks for some input and research done on that question. Could you let us know what your concerns might be on that?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I, of course, would not be in favor of the private sector participation simply because I feel the projects were basically built to support the communities that the projects serve. And if we put it into the private sector, I'm afraid that the dollars will not remain in the state of Alaska. They will leave the state, and I don't think that's what we want right now. I think it would be better that the communities that the project serve be allowed to participate and not the private sector. That's my first cut at it, and perhaps I don't have the new language in front of me, but I believe that we would probably oppose to private sector participation.
Okay, it's a separate resolve, so the RFP still goes out to the communities, and the separate resolve just asks for Alaska Energy Authority to give us advice on whether a private entity could participate, or could potentially participate, but the resolve calling for the RFP is still basically the same way it is. The rating does not call for the RFP to be thrown wide open.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. As I said, I don't have that new resolve in front of me, but if the intent is just to have them evaluate whether or not a private sector could participate, I suppose that remains to be seen, of course. I would just be leery of an RFP that would go out for any participation. I think we would want only the communities that the Ford Dam Pool serves to participate, but of course, we would have to take a look at it closely.
Okay. Representative Osterman?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Walter,
That's exactly what the new further resolve does. It does not indicate, as near as I can read this, that the that it opens up to the private sector at this point in time. But going back to page one, the resolve that has been removed with this CS is the resolve. Is the resolve that talks about the power sales agreement and it has significant liabilities related to the power projects, including responsibility for uninsured facility failures, substandard performance deficiencies in the reserve and replacement fund, and loss of power sales. That has been taken out with this new CS, that language, and I'm wondering whether you really understand that that's the language that's taken out.
I understood, thank you, Mr. Artsman. I understood that to be the case. I guess I would have a question as to, I mean, that whereas is a factual statement, and I would just wonder why it was necessary to remove that.
And Representative Osterman, I think though in looking at, we're asking for the work that's requested in the new resolve with regards to significant liabilities. I want to know what those liabilities are and if there's a way that the state could be indemnified. And I guess at this point, I'm not willing to just basically stipulate to that fact. And so that's why I struck the resolve or the whereas out. Are there any further questions for Mr. Sapp in Kodiak? If not, we do have a member, Representative Williams.
Was he part of writing up this initial resolution?
Representative Osterman, was Mr. Sapp involved in the initial language?
He looked at the initial language before we submitted it. Yes, he didn't necessarily write it.
Okay, I will.
A lot of this language, including that piece, was in the original language we had here last year and the year before.
We do have a number of other individuals that wish to testify on this. First of all, we'll go to Robert Wilkinson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and members of the committee. I am Robert Wilkinson. I'm the Chief Executive Officer of Copper Valley Electric Association. I'm also the designated representative to the Four Dam Pool. Copper Valley operates the Solomon Gulch Hydroelectric Project, which is part of the Four Dam Pool. It seems I wasn't here at the time the project was developed, but it looked like the Four Dam Pool agreement was probably a good idea at the time, and now maybe times have changed and it's time to do something different. I think all the members of the committee and most folks who know anything about the arrangement know that the long-term power sales agreement is not a real good deal for the state of Alaska. There's a huge financial risk that the state bears. We don't have a take-or-pay provision in the contract. The state carries the risk of uninsured failures, premature failure of the project, substandard performance. Shortfalls to the renewal and replacement fund and operates that under that risk with a fixed revenue stream, fixed debt service that comes off the project. I think it's safe to assume that the risk of owning the projects is likely to increase with the passage of time, and the revenue stream that the projects are going to generate is essentially going to not grow in a corresponding manner and is essentially fixed with the passage of time. We think there is a good opportunity at this juncture to revisit discussions with the state on divestiture. We spent a couple of years talking about that in 95 and 96. It did not bear fruit at that time. But I can tell you on behalf of Copper Valley and I think the other members of the Four Dam Pool, the purchasing utilities are sincerely interested in revisiting divestiture and going back to the table. We see it as an opportunity to purchase the projects, a major benefit of which would be local ownership and control. These are public power projects that were constructed with public funds, and it's public power that benefits from the energy that's produced by each and every one of those. The utilities have a renewed interest and intend to make a sincere proposal, I believe. I don't think there's a mindset that we ask the state to give us these hydro projects. Having said that, and having talked about the risk and the limited revenue stream, the number that these are likely to be sold at with the long-term power sales agreement going along is quite probably, in my mind, not a real huge number. We've done considerable analysis over the years and working with Randy Simmons and his folks at ADA to try and quantify the cost of owning them and also the revenue stream. And we certainly would like an opportunity to revisit that effort. We think there's a number of other positive things, not only the local ownership and control if the utilities were to acquire these. Also, we think there's going to be some future economic benefits associated with the cost of operation. And all of the utilities in the Fort Bend pool pay very high rates. The average across the pool is about 12.3 cents a kilowatt hour. That compares with a statewide average of 10.4 cents a kilowatt hour, and at my utility, our average is something slightly under 15 cents a kilowatt hour. So we see the opportunity to purchase Solomon Gulch and be able to operate it more efficiently as a cost reduction program for us. We support HCR 10. Copper Valley would not support the amendment, which has to do with looking at the private aspect. We strongly believe these are public power projects and that the state should look at selling them for a fair price to the utilities that they were constructed for. Also believe that in the event we've heard some discussion on a request for proposal approach, believe that that is very problematic with particularly the municipal utilities in that they have to deal right on top of the table in the public process. The co-ops would be able to participate in that. We are public utilities, but we are private corporations. But believe that a public process would be very difficult for Wrangell, Petersburg, and Ketchikan. Finally, we believe that if the state does decide to sell the Fort Bend pool, we have a catchphrase that my friend Bob Evans has come up with. We think that any proposed purchaser should meet the three C's, and that is they should certainly have the capital, and we think the Fort Bend pool can put this deal together. They should have the credibility and as operators of the projects, and we've got 15 years of proving that we can do that in some of the harshest economic climates in the United States. And most, maybe perhaps most importantly, we believe that these purchasers should have the commitment to Alaska, and we are all locally owned and operated utilities, each one of the five purchasers, and we're committed to be here. That's what we do for a living, and we're committed to make it better. So I very much appreciate the members of the committee the opportunity to testify on behalf of HCR 10. Thank you.
Representative Davies and then Osterman.
So I just want to reiterate, you believe that under the power sales agreement that the state of Alaska through the Energy Authority retains significant liabilities at the present time.
Representative Davies, yes, I do believe that.
And that includes uninsured facility failure?
Yes, sir.
And substandard in performance?
Yes, sir.
And deficiencies in the reserve and replacement fund?
Yes, sir.
Thank you.
Representative Osterman, and then Bundy.
Yes, sir. Would you, being involved with your utility the way you are and understanding what the power sales agreement is and does, would you highlight for the committee, please, your interpretation of power sales agreement and the impact it would have on the sale of the Fort Bend?
My opinion of Representative Osterman, I have a real question as to whether or not anybody could or would be interested in purchasing the Fort Bend pool in a commercial transaction in the event they had to assume the obligations under the long-term power sales agreement. Quite frankly, perhaps this terminology is a bit colorful, but quite frankly, the long-term power sales agreement is a real dog for the state. They have all the risk of ownership and none of the benefits or rewards. And I can certainly understand why the state would like to divest themselves of the project. And that is a major driver as to why I think we all understand these projects cost somewhere on the order of $500 million. And that is why, in doing the economic analysis and crunching the numbers, when you net out the present value of the revenue stream that you will get for the next 31 years off of the debt service, and you net that compared to the present value of the risk of owning them, the risk being anything from mechanical obsolescence to breakdown to avalanche, tsunamis. I can give you a good example of what happened in my backyard in 1988. An avalanche chute known as School Bus Run came roaring down Thompson Pass, took out 7 structures, and the line was on the ground for 9 months. It cost $1.75 million to put it back up. That is an example of some of the risk of ownership.
Who bore that cost?
The state of Alaska bore that cost.
Mr. Chairman.
Go ahead.
The power sales agreement between the utilities and the state of Alaska, in your opinion, can the power sales agreement be broken without agreement of the utilities or sold without agreement of the utilities?
Representative Osterman, I don't have a legal background. My understanding is that the power sales agreement could be to back up. The four dam pool could certainly be sold by the state. The agreement could be assigned. However, as I understand it, contract law says that the obligations of the state of Alaska could not necessarily be eliminated by virtue of the fact that they did enter into this agreement with the purchasing utilities. So we would be of the opinion that the state can certainly sell a four dam pool, but that the terms of the power sales agreement would need to be honored unless all of the 5 purchasing utilities in the state agreed to modify it.
Excellent. Bundy?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. To use your words, this purchase would be a dog. Why wouldn't it be a dog for the communities as well as a private enterprise?
I think it all has to do with Representative Bundy. I think it all has to do with the coming to an acceptable purchase price that takes into consideration the future risk of ownership. And to the extent the sales price reflects that, it's going to make commercial sense. In Copper Valley Electric's case, we believe that there are several other benefits that accrue from owning our project that have economic benefits. So that all factors into the equation as well.
And get it for a fire sale price, anything's worth getting. Mr. Chairman, the Copper Valley now is a consumer-owned. Are any of the electrical utilities involved in the Ford Am pool owned by cities?
Representative Bundy, Copper Valley Electric and Kodiak Electric are member-owned cooperative organizations. Ketchikan Public Utilities, Wrangell Municipal Power and Light, Petersburg Power and Light are all municipal utilities. Yes, sir.
For those latter three, I'll try to keep that in mind when I hear them complain about municipal revenue sharing, that they have enough capital to buy a power system. Thank you.
Mr. Wilkinson, could you touch on the concern that you expressed about the open public process? The RFP process, I think. Is that what you're referring to?
Yes, sir. Representative Terrio, my understanding is that if, for example, a competitive request for proposal was to go forward, that the municipal utilities could not participate in a confidential and private manner in that type of process. That's my understanding.
Okay, if that were to, the first resolve, I guess, is what you're referring to, the language of that. If that wording was just replaced with should negotiate with the communities served by the four dam pool, would negotiate have the same problem? Or since it's not an actual RFP process?
Representative Foley, I may be getting a little out ahead of myself because I'm not exactly sure, but I think what the utilities are proposing or would like to see happen would be a negotiated sales price. And it's my understanding that I believe the four dam pool could, the PMC, excuse me, purchasing utilities could meet in closed session. However, any ultimate sale or purchase offer would have to be approved by, in some cases, the members, the public, in the cities of Wrangell, Petersburg, and Ketchikan. In the case of the cooperatives, that deal could be approved on behalf of the members by the board of directors. So each of us has our governing bodies that ultimately has to approve any consummating any transaction.
Mm-hmm. And certainly the legislature would have to be involved, too. I'm just wondering, for the purpose of negotiating you know, taking out the RFP and putting in negotiate, does that then allow those communities to negotiate basically the way that you indicated would be preferable?
It would be preferable to copy that, yes, sir.
Yes, sir, Davis.
I was led to believe in the discussion on this at the Utility Restructuring Committee that the reason why the RFP language was in there was because there was a possibility that there would be different consortiums of the municipalities and the memorandum cooperatives, that there might be different proposals that would come out of that small community, and that's why that language was requested. Different combinations of interest that might look at things. It might not just go one by one, but there might be two of them that would come together, a proposal to buy three of them or some, that kind of thing. Could you reiterate, given that background, could you reiterate for me what the problem is from the municipality's point of view with participating in a request for proposal process? I didn't quite follow what the problem was.
Representative Davies, as I understand it, and I think we might have some folks on testifying from Petersburg and Wrangell that might be able to explain this for you a little bit
I'll
better.
For them if they're on.
No?
Yeah. Yeah, we don't have anyone online from those areas. Representative Davies, from your discussion and participation in the earlier committee process, was wording such as negotiate with.
I suppose it was rejected.
It would seem to me like if two of them wanted to band together and negotiate, it's not restrictive. It doesn't say that it has to be all together or separate. I don't know why they wouldn't be able to come together.
I just bowed to the will of the sponsor.
Representative Osterman.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Well, what Representative Davies said was the way we were looking at it and haven't looked at it all along, was that there is the Four Dam Pool, which could become the Four Dam Pool Inc., for example, and want to bid on it. It could be that Kodiak and Copper Valley might want to get together and put in an RFP on it separate from what the Four Dam Pool Inc. might want to do. We hadn't, whether Ketchikan wanted to put it in, whether Wrangell wanted to put it in a separate proposal. We were looking at the possibility of all four doing it separately, all four doing it together. There were just a number of different possibilities that were talked about at one point in time. We didn't, to us then it became an RFP that many people looking at.
Representative Davies or Representative Osterman, the current fiscal note with the bill is a zero, but if I remember from the discussions that we had last time on this, Mr. Simmons from ADA indicated that a full-blown RFP costs his entity upwards of $120,000 to do. Was there a discussion on that? And we do hope to get him online before we're done with our deliberations, because I believe that it does potentially entail substantial cost for ADA. And with that, if there are no other questions, Representative Osterman.
Mr. Chairman, if we're going to get to that point where we want to talk about the difference between negotiating the RFP, I would like to have a chance to talk to the organizations involved and maybe negotiate my work.
Okay. Any other questions for the witness?
There you go.
Sorry. my reflex is just that way.
He was only fingering you. You couldn't expect it.
But generally,
you had your right. Mr. Chairman, I know.
I wonder if we could talk about the resolve that changed in the CS. In the original, the way I read the original, the group resolved. Number two, the power projects provided adequate power to communities, and in the CS it has the authority gives due consideration. Could you tell me what number two was in the original bill? And what number two in the CS means to you?
Representative Williams, I'm sorry, I can't answer that question. Perhaps Representative Osterman could help us with that change.
I think Representative Williams is just concerned about the deletion of the language that says the power projects, that the sale will ensure that the power projects provide adequate power to the communities. And I guess my feeling is, if the state sells the projects, how are we supposed to ensure that well into the future the projects provide adequate power? I don't know if that's something that we can ensure in that language. Just seem to be necessary to meet Representative Osterman.
I did have an amendment that I was going to propose tonight that took that language out of it anyway, because I'm the same way Representative Terriot is if we're going to sell it and be out of it and altogether done with it, there's no way that the state can assure that each one of the units would provide the adequate power. That would be up to each one of the communities that involved to make sure that the units provide adequate power.
Representative Williams, did you have a follow-up question? Representative Davies?
Well, I guess I would think that, of course, you can't guarantee the future, but I think that the kind of assurance here would be that it would be a credible proposal that would provide that kind of adequate power. I mean, you wouldn't, to put it in the other way around, you wouldn't want to authorize a sale that, on the face of it, wouldn't provide adequate power. So,
Representative Osterman.
We debated that around quite a bit. It, in my opinion, and several other people's opinion, is that once you give it to ADA, they have a due diligence process that they have to go through to make sure that each one of the organizations is doing the job and doing it correctly and providing a sound process that they're going to be using. I think that just the fact that ADA is the one that's negotiating gives me a comfort level that's right on top.
Okay, and one last question before you leave. With regards to the resolve that is being added on, asking for an evaluation of whether a private entity could come in and indemnify the state and honor the power costs or power sales agreements, do you see any reason why the legislature shouldn't have that information or shouldn't have the benefit of that evaluation if we are to consider in the future a potential sale to the communities?
Representative Terrio, I cannot give you an adequate response that says no, there is no reason the legislature should not have that information. I do believe very strongly these projects should be sold to the public that are benefited to construct.
Okay, if there are no further questions, we do have Mr. Simmons on the line. We've pulled him from the meeting, so I would like to get a little bit of testimony from him. Randy, are you online right now?
Yes, Chairman, I am.
Okay, we had a little bit of discussion just a few minutes ago with regards to the cost to ADA of the RFP process, and I'm just wondering if you have considered the current wording of the resolution that we have before us that respectfully requests that the Alaska Energy Authority divest itself by preparing an RFP for the sale of projects to the communities. What would be the cost of that RFP? I think I remember from our deliberations a couple of years ago that was $100,000 to
$120,000. Mr. Chairman, that's correct. I would like to comment on that. If it's the current resolution where we do an RFP just for the communities, I would say that we would put in a zero fiscal note, and let me explain to you why. That's truly not a competitive practice. We really don't have to do a lot of work to do that RFP. I could probably do that in a one- or two-page letter, which would be a letter to the communities basically stating here are the conditions that need to be satisfied in a proposal made to the state. So that truly does not take a lot of work. On the other hand, if it is going to be opened up to other parties into a truly competitive practices policy, then we would need to do a formal RFP, and that would be probably around $120,000.
Okay. So really, the way this is structured, It says RFP, but it really is just negotiations.
Mr. Chairman, that is correct. That's the way I read it. It would not take a lot of work for us to send this letter to ask for proposals from communities.
Okay. Are there other questions for Mr. Simmons? Representative Osterman?
Yeah, Randy. The original
resolution had the language in it about the power sales agreement, the significance liability of it, responsibility for insured failures, and that kind of stuff. In your working with this over the last few years and your knowledge of the power sales agreement, can you tell us if the state does have the liabilities because of the power sales agreement for uninsured facility failures and substandard performance and deficiencies?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, Representative Osterman, we do believe that. And what I'll do is Keith Lumper, who is our legal financial affairs manager, is sitting here, and he can explain to you very simply what categories where we believe we have that responsibility, that liability. Keith?
Thanks, Mr. Chairman, Representative Osterman. Under the power sales agreement, the state retains liability for a few specified categories, and Representative Osterman is correct. Those categories include uninsured facility failures, design-related problems, and deficiencies in the R&R fund.
And if I might add, Mr. Chairman, Osterman, the deficiencies in the R&R fund are probably some of the biggest risks that we actually see at this point in time.
Thank you.
Thank you, Randy and Keith. Are there other questions? Representative Davies.
I wasn't quite sure. I didn't hear. Did he include loss of power sales in that list of liabilities?
Keith, did you hear that question?
I think I did, Mr. Chairman. Under the power sales agreement we have, it's not what's known as a take or pay power sales agreement. So to the extent the projects are not producing power, there would be no revenues coming in. So to that extent, there is a risk to the state from its revenue standpoint based on production of power. Does that answer the question?
Yes, it does. Yes, it does. Okay, thank you. Any other questions for Ada? Representative Davies, one.
Yeah, I just wondered, in dealing with this proposed RFP process here, are there some sort of savings or advantages that you can take of the fact that you've already gone around this track once?
Yeah. Mr. Chairman, Representative Davies, in the way that it's written now, so where again we're dealing just with the communities, yes, the communities and the authority has already spent a considerable amount of time and effort, and we wouldn't be starting from scratch.
Right.
And I think that's why my comment is we would basically send a letter and say, here's the conditions that we would like to be addressed in a proposal. And as you'll remember, one of the conditions we've always had in there is that we would bring any proposal back to the legislature. So after we did our conditions,
feel that without an agreement of the utilities, the power sales agreement can be broken or sold so that the state removes all liability?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Austin, I'm going to let Keith answer that question, and I think we have a fairly simple answer to that.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Austin, my belief is that we could sell the projects and assign our interest in the projects to a third-party buyer. However, under normal contract law provisions, unless the Fort Dam Pool communities were to release the state would have secondary liability in the event that the buyer were not to fulfill the obligations. And when I say the state, it's really the Alaska Energy Authority.
Okay, and Keith, could the Energy Authority be indemnified perhaps through a bond or something of that that would back up an indemnification?
Mr. Chairman, there are a variety of ways that you could support the buyer's obligations to fulfill those obligations. You could do it with some sort of credit enhancement, letter of credit, a bond, If the entity that was purchasing were large enough, you may not even need that if it has sufficient protocol. The guarantee of that entity could be sufficient in and of itself.
But, Mr. Chairman, I'll add, that would be a requirement that we would always recommend.
Okay. And the resolve that we've added to the resolution basically asks that the Alaska Energy Authority evaluate methods by which a private sector person may be able to package a deal or structure a package that would ensure that the power sales agreements are honored and the states, how the state of Alaska or its entities could be indemnified. And do you have any comments on us asking you to evaluate that possibility?
Mr. Chairman, we just now got that, so we haven't had a chance to look at that. If you're asking whether we could evaluate it, make a recommendation to you as to whether it's possible for a third party to successfully bid and give a fair price and also indemnify the state for any potential liability that they have, yes, we can do that for you.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions? If not, thank you, Randy and Keith. Next, we'll go to Dave Carlson in Petersburg. Mr. Carlson, are you online?
Yes, I am, Chairman Terry Owen. Thanks for the opportunity. And we just received the substitute draft of the resolution, and I've been reading that. And I've only got a couple comments to make. First, on page one, and this is just a minor typo, I believe, on line 8, where it says, which is party to a 40-year power sales agreement. I think that should read 45-year power sales agreement. And then the other comment I'd like to make regarding negotiate or an RFP, being a municipality and a former mayor and a former council member, it would be extremely difficult to respond to an RFP because of the open meeting law process. We've always favored, and I'm sure Rangel and Kitchikan would favor that the negotiated settlement on a process whereby if we finally did reach an agreement on a sales price, then we would have to go back to the governing bodies in an open session and get their approval. I think that would work just fine. And I think that's all the comments I have. Thank you.
Okay. I think I will get around to offering an amendment dealing with the RFP or negotiate language. I don't want it to say RFP if basically, as Mr. Simmons testified, it really is a negotiation. When you say RFP, people have a certain process, and as we discussed perhaps before you got online, there's a cost associated with that. So we would have RFP, but we'd have a zero fiscal note indicating that a true RFP is not going to be going through. It would really be just a negotiation. Are there any questions for Mr. Carlson? Seeing none, then we'll go on. Here in Juneau, we have Eric Yu. He just stepped out, so we'll move on to Chris Hawker and Brian Rogers. Did you want to testify separately?
Thank you. Excuse me, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Chris Hawker. I'm Vice President of Business Development and Corporate Affairs for CHI Energy of Stamford, Connecticut. And I'm here today because CHI would like the opportunity to make a cash purchase, or make a proposal to make a cash purchase, of the four dam pool hydroelectric facilities. CHI Energy is an independent power producer, what's so-called true independent, that is non-utility affiliated, with a portfolio of 79 hydro projects in the lower 48 and in Canada. There's one project in Canada. The location of these projects varies. They're scattered around 14 U.S. states and one Canadian province with a concentration in the Northeast. The size range goes from very small, under 1 megawatt, to about 25 megawatts, and several of them are of the size range of the facilities in the four dam pool. CHI was established in 1986. We're privately owned. Our major shareholders include Morgan Stanley and Company and UBS, formerly Swiss Bank, Merrill Lynch. we're quite experienced in the acquisition, financing, operation, maintenance, administration, and FERC compliance aspects of owning hydroelectric facilities. And if I could just comment on some of the ownership risks that have been mentioned in previous testimony. Those risks generally are those that we as private sector owners deal with and take on every day, although we've never dealt with a tsunami, so I will make that an exception. But we have dealt with severe weather conditions, with ice, with structures falling down, with a wide variety of problems that beset hydroelectric facilities, and there are ways to bear those risks. Insurance is one, and the fact that we're a portfolio owner is another, where our revenue stream clearly is not dependent on simply one project, one facility. In any event, when we became aware that divesting the Four Dam Pool was a topic of discussion here, we were naturally very interested because of the close fit of these facilities with our own experience and capabilities. We made some preliminary inquiries and engaged some advisors who were much closer to the situation than we were. Based on the available information that we've seen to date, and it is preliminary, we've come to the following preliminary conclusions. Number one, subject to standard due diligence, we believe we'd be prepared to pay at least $80 million in cash to acquire the Four Dam Pool facilities. Number two, transferring the facilities to private ownership need not have a significant impact on the existing power sales agreement or on the day-to-day operation of the facilities, including current employees. Number three, such an acquisition could be done by conventional project financing means in the private sector without exposing the state or the affected communities to any financial risk. Number four, such an acquisition could provide more certainty of wholesale power rates for the affected communities for the remaining 30 years of the power sales agreement, without the need for rate reopeners that exist now in the power sales agreement. In addition, to mitigate for the fact that we are outsiders, we would intend to involve Alaska-based entities and local interests in any ownership and operation of the facilities that we might participate in. My purpose, again, for coming here is to indicate the potential benefits of private ownership of the Four Dam Pool, and really, fundamentally, simply to ask for the opportunity to make a proposal to acquire these facilities. That concludes my statement. Thank you.
Thank you. Further questions for Mr. Hawker? And seeing none, Mr. Representative Osterman.
Thank you. Your letter and your remarks in reference to the $80 million in cash, is in the last year that, or 2 years ago or last year when we were dealing with this before, the cash offers that we were listening to were not necessarily just a straight cash out buyout. It was getting the communities involved and them putting up part of it and that kind of stuff. Is that the same basic concept that we're talking about here? Or is this really a straight cash buyout that you're talking about?
Yeah, it's a straight cash buyout. And again, I should, if I could, just explain our approach. We've acquired many hydro facilities in our experience. And rather than try to outsmart ourselves in examining this particular potential, we've approached it preliminarily from how would we do this if we were acquiring these hydro projects, and run some preliminary numbers. And our conclusion is that the cash value that we would, you know, conceivably write a check for would be in the $80 million range or more. It's a straight cash. You
know. Representative Osterman?
And you, are you aware of the type of buyout that was in process last time?
I am not, my history is a little sketchy. I'm not sure which you're referring to.
Mr. Chairman, and one of the concerns that the communities had, obviously, was the fact that the buyout at that point in time was that the communities themselves were going to buy into the project, basically, themselves by putting up, I think it was like half of the cost
the communities were going to get involved with the purchaser themselves, and that was part of the way that the negotiations were going on at that point in time, anyway.
Okay.
Trying to clarify whether we're going to, you know, that.
But this does not have that. What we're suggesting, our approach would not have that aspect of it.
Any other questions? Representative Foster?
Yeah, no, the resolution, the way it's written right now, wouldn't allow for a buyout from a different company, would it?
That's right. The way they, one resolve, the first one reads, it would be negotiations only with the communities. However, the resolve that was added at the end would ask for an evaluation by the Energy Authority of whether a private entity could, in fact, participate. Certainly up to this point, we've had arguments back and forth about whether in fact, because of the power sales agreement, private entities could participate. And I think we need to get an answer to that.
Line 8 through 13 on page 2, then? Is that it?
That's right.
Representative Davis. Quite what that says. It says whether there's a mechanism by which they could propose a way for that to happen. Under the terms of this resolution, they still, even if it were feasible under the AEA's, Alaska Energy Authority's evaluation, it still wouldn't be consistent with this resolution.
It wouldn't be
consistent with this resolution, since the resolution specifically says only to the municipalities.
That's right. Representative Williams.
Yeah, I don't know how this ties in with what's before us right today. We have a resolution to, the way I interpret it, is to deal with the five communities. And we have something here that's totally different than what has been discussed. I would suggest that we not discuss this at this time.
And I guess from my perspective, if there's going to be negotiations resulting in a proposal that we sell it and sell it only to the communities, I would like at that time some additional information on whether private entities could participate. And if they did participate, how that could be possibly structured.
We're getting exactly to the problem that we got into last time when we talked about negotiating with the four dam pool communities. With the further be resolved that you have here that you added, talking about the private sector. Well, the four dam pool communities, what they want to do is charge lower power rates as they possibly can with just enough for M&O on their facilities to keep it going. When you bring the private sector in, you're actually talking about the profit margin, which definitely affects the other two aspects that we're talking about. If we allow the private sector to be in there, the same thing that's happening in this community meeting will happen. The four dam pool people are sitting around with ADA, the energy thing, talking about it. People like this are kibitzing and whatnot, talking in one ear, and that's exactly what killed it last time. When you make them part of this attempt to work with the four dam pool, you bring the outside groups in, private groups in, they're whispering in one guy, you know, Randy's ear, and they're trying to sit there, and then they get us all confused as well, saying, well, we can offer better than that, we can do this, we can do that, then pretty soon they're selling stock to people out in communities. I think Representative Williams is right, that we're now entering into exactly the problem that caused the thing to fall down when some private groups came in with schemes that were bizarre, if nothing. I'm not saying that your proposal is bizarre, but it made it impossible for them to sit down and negotiate because, by the way it is, this one group was allowed to go into these private sessions, making remarks, snorting and doing things like that, and this is not what we're trying to do. Mr. Chairman, this result here, I'd like to see out of it. Let's see what we can do with the four damn pool people first. If that doesn't work, then we'll open it up to the private sector.
But a part of the reason why we should sell it to the communities and only the communities is the private sector can't get past the power sales agreement. I want to know that, and I can tell you for myself, I'm not likely to support any sale to the communities without some further information, and that's all this resolve is asking for. It's not asking that they be able to participate in the negotiations or make a separate offer themselves to the Energy Authority, but it's asking that the Energy Authority evaluate the abilities and financial mechanisms that we should consider. Because when we're, if a proposal is made to us next year, we're going to be considering private involvement. We can either do it with some more information or not. But we're going to get to that discussion sooner or later, and it's going to be before there's a sale. Senator Williams?
Yeah. We sat here the last 2 years or the last 3 years, whatever it was, in this same position. We didn't get anywhere. We had people, the private sector coming in, proposing to buy the four-dam pool. The cities are sitting over here wondering how they can get better power. You know, we can, that didn't work. We've seen how that worked the last go around. It didn't work. I think we should try this process that Representative Wasserman came up with and deal with the four cities this term. And continue on and find out. It didn't cost us anything to find out how much the bottom line of these guys are, 80 million.
Well, Representative Williams,
we start talking about your reserve there. I agree with Representative Grusendorf, we should take it out and let's get this up to the original issue of Representative Wasserman wanted.
Refresh my memory, and really, when we passed out the resolution previously, did it open it up to a competitive RFP for everybody, communities, and private sector?
I don't know the exact wording, but that's basically what had happened.
Okay, and that's not what this proposes. As far as the negotiations, it's still only with the communities.
Well, I could tell you right now, Mr. Chairman, you have a letter here from this company here saying that it's worth. We have the guys on the state trying to figure out what they said they can come up with. They already said that they can come up with a letter like this with a zero fiscal note, and we can negotiate with the cities. That's what we're trying to do. We already got what you wanted with this simple further resolve. So I think what we should do is take it out and go back to the original resolution. And deal with the communities, the four dam pool communities, and go with that. We already went this route. It didn't work.
I think the route we went was a completely open RFP for the public and the private. That's not what this asked for. And we heard from Mr. Simmons that as far as an evaluation, they could do that. And if we're going to ask for a proposal from the public entities, I'd also like to ask that the evaluation be done, and I don't think that taints the negotiations.
We'll have to do that if we ask.
So let's just ask for it.
Not at this point, Mr. Chairman. We are walking in the same situation before when we opened it up for RFPs and whatnot, where it was impossible for the four dam pool communities to sit down because they had outside interests that were jumping around saying, this won't work, we can offer you 10 million more, we can do this, we can do that, we can sell you stock. And by the time it was over, it ended up that not only were the citizens buying the stock for this, financing half of the cost, that they also wanted a guarantee from the state for the other part, asking for a loan. I don't know, GCI, are you HCI? Are you registered to do business in this state?
Not that I'm aware of.
Okay. See, that's the problem. We have them coming in. The other group that was HCI Management, HCI Steel, and this is CHI, right? See, we're getting into the same thing. This is the first of probably many groups that are going to come in. They've given us $80 million, okay? That's something that we can deal with for the four dam pool communities. No, probably that might be close to the figure. Let's see if it works.
And the Committee Grusendorf from Representative Williams, the resolve that I'm suggesting be added here asks for more than just a letter saying we think it's worth $80 million. In fact, it doesn't ask for a price. It asks for structurally and in the financing world and in the legal world, how could a package be structured that would take the state out of the line of liability? Because I'm not really interested in selling it to a private sector group if the state really is still on the line for liability. But I'm not sure out in the creative world of packaging of deals and limiting liability, how that could possibly be structured. That's why I'm asking for that to be evaluated. It doesn't ask anything about what the price might be. It's just how structurally such a package could be put together. Is it possible? Representative Davis, and then we'll get to the testimony of Mr. Rogers.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It seems like, was it last year we did this, or year before?
2 years ago.
2 years ago. Although the communities had had an amount of time to negotiate something, and that didn't work. And we just heard Randy Simmons say, yeah, it shouldn't take much time, shouldn't take a long time this time to do that, because they already went through that process. They should be able to put something together rather rapidly now. And what are we going to compare anything to? And that's, I mean, are we going to have anything to compare it to? We're going to get ready to convey all of this stuff, all of our assets, to somebody without a comparison on value, on operation, and whether we are tied to long-time commitments and liabilities. It seems like it's giving us something to compare, and it also gives some kick in the rear end to the communities to put something together. I mean, how long do they need? I mean, how many years does it take them to decide what they want to do with all of this? Long as we keep operating it as we are, I guess there's really no impetus for them to do it.
Mr. Chairman? Yeah, I don't think we should sit here and listen to proposals now. I don't think that's what this resolution is meant to, as Representative Williams said. We're getting into the proposal aspect of it and what they would do. That's not what this resolution does. They can make that proposal later if there's opportunity in this resolution to do so. They express their interest, fine. I'm glad they expressed their interest.
Mr. Rogers.
The record, my name is Brian Rogers, Information Insights of Fairbanks, financial advisor to CHI Energy on this issue. And I want to reinforce a couple of things that Chris said. First, the company has only done preliminary analysis, and part of the issue here is a chicken and egg situation, that a transaction requires a willing buyer and a willing seller. If the state is not a willing seller, there's no reason for CHI to spend the cost of due diligence to fully flesh out a proposal, to fully understand the cost. But based on sort of an initial review, we believe that if you open the opportunity for a private proposal, that one can come forward that doesn't involve any bizarre and complex financing by the state, that doesn't involve abrogating an existing deal. And we recognize that the power sale agreement, as flawed as it may be, is a deal, and that the state can't just walk away from that deal, nor can anyone who takes over say that the state should walk away from that deal. And also that the company is open to working with existing Alaska entities. Your policy choice really, you know, I think has been pretty clear here between public and private ownership, and if you're not interested, please signal that to the company and save them some money. If you are interested, please signal that by giving them the opportunity. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Yes, Mr. Rogers, you were asked, or someone over there was asking whether or not we heard of the sale, and the gentleman to your left, right, said, no, he hadn't, but you were saying yes. Have you heard of the sale before?
Yeah, I certainly saw in portions of gavel-to-gavel coverage of hearings with an offer that was very substantially different from this one, and that one went away, and my understanding was the last I think that was 2 years ago. Since that time, as I understand, there's been no change in the situation in terms of a negotiation. But if there has, I'm not aware of that.
You weren't working for the other company?
No.
Okay. And as far as an indication of if the state is interested in possible participation, I guess what I'm asking for in the resolve is technically, is that participation allowed, or is there a structure that would even allow consideration of that participation? Because I can't make that decision until I get some of those questions answered.
Mr. Chairman, I understand, and I think as I read that resolve that asks the Energy Authority if there's a structure that's possible, I think in terms of company work on it, if it's only open to the, if you're saying only open to the four dam pool communities, then I would advise the company, wait and see.
Representative Osterman.
Well, actually, no, you've just answered my question. I was, in reading the Ford, reading the resolution as the way it's written right now, there, it is not open to the private sector the way this resolution is written, and they would have to wait and see. I'd like to address just a little bit of what Representative Yusuf Williams was talking about before in reference to the new, whereas, or excuse me, resolution that you put in there in reference to ADA. Is it possible that, first off, number one, is it possible for us to get that information without having it in the resolution? I believe it is. I think all we have to do is ask ADA, and I think they'd do it for us. That makes me want to keep this resolution, if we're going to keep it only to the utilities, to keep it clean. But if it's not possible to take that out of there at this point in time, this does not kill this resolution. Does not stop it from accomplishing what it's set out to do.
Are there any further questions for Mr. Rogers? We have been joined also on the teleconference by Ed Kozak with the Kodiak Electric Association, I believe. Mr. Kozak, are you online?
Yes, hi. This is Ed Kozak, Mr. Chairman and committee members. I just came into the meeting late, so I did not hear everything that has gone on before me. Thank you very much for allowing me the time to say a few words. I'm the general manager of Kodiak Electric Association. You might have been told that KEA is an electric utility that is a co-op, and we've been in business for 57 years supplying the energy needs of the citizens of Kodiak. And also, I might add, Fort Lyons. I think we have to look at the question, what is best for the state of Alaska and the Four Dam Pool communities themselves when we look at this whole issue? And to me, I think local ownership will provide what is best for the state and the community. Because we sincerely believe that utility ownership provides significant opportunities for rate reduction, cost control, reliability, and production of quality of service. There's a potential there for increased economic development opportunities if we have local control and local decision-making processes of our projects. We've got the people at the site that have the knowledge and the training to run the projects and to run them most efficiently and safely. And also the communities that are served by the projects are either a cooperative or a municipal. And what this means is whenever there is any savings whatsoever, that 100% of that savings will stay within the communities and within the state of Alaska. And as I indicated in my written report, that as an example, Kodiak Electric, just in the last 3 years alone, we returned $3 million back to the membership of KEA in the form of capital credits. You won't get this when you have private ownership. The city of Kodiak, the Kodiak and Burrell, the Chamber of Commerce, the city of Fort Lyons, all passed resolutions in support of local ownership. We believe that hydro projects last 50 to 100 years if properly maintained. They'll last a long, long time. We sincerely believe if we took a look at the power sales agreement as it looks now, at the end of the 45-year period of the PSA, that the communities will receive energy from those projects with basically zero debt service because the debt service will be paid off at the end of 45 years. If you have private ownership, there will never be an end to it. The local ownership under the PSA, again, will say there will be rate reductions for the local retail users of the project. So we sincerely support all your effort on seeing that the projects could be negotiated with the utilities and the communities that currently serve power from the projects. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Representative Bundy?
Just referring back to Representative Davis's question earlier, a couple of years ago this topic was up and the communities were going to do something we haven't heard yet. I'm just wondering why we haven't.
I'd like to comment on that. The reason like this, communities haven't been sitting back and wondering whether or not we could buy this. There are several things that were happening. Slum Lake Intertower, we were talking about. How is that going to affect this? How would, we talked about this in amongst ourselves here, the Four Dam Pool, wondering what would happen in Tyree Lake. there's so much power going over Tyree Lake that there isn't enough there. We have to get power, and in Swamp Lake there isn't enough power. So we're trying to get those two areas continued on. There are things within the four dam pool that if one community says they do not want to continue on or go on with this project or any portion of any agreement, they can veto the whole thing. So when you have one community that isn't doing good in one area, and the other one is, and you're trying to tie them together, and Ketchikan has been working very diligently on a transmission line to tie the two power companies together so that we can make one. And I can tell you right now, if this was to go forward, I'm sure Ketchikan and I'm sure Rango would not accept this agreement. We're trying to do something here with the community so that everyone will go along with it.
Okay, Bundy?
Well, and we don't need this debate here, but and it's been 2 years and you're trying, and I hear a lot of obstacles, a lot of unanswered questions. At what point do the questions get answered? What point do the obstacles go away? Take 10 years?
Well, at 10 years, no, I would hope that with the passage of Representative Osterman's resolution that we would find out before the end of the next session what would happen, what could happen.
Okay, were there any other questions for Mr. Kozak? Seeing none, is there anyone else in the audience that wishes to testify? Is there anyone else on teleconference that wishes to testify? And seeing none, we have heard that there is a problem with page 1, line 8, instead of 40. The testimony was that should read 45-year power sales agreement. I would like to move an amendment number 1, that would make that correction. Is there any objection to that amendment? Then amendment number 1 will be adopted. I would also like to move an amendment to Representative Osterman with regards to RFP versus negotiate. I would propose that that if you just strike all of line 15 on page 1, strike all of line 15 and the word utilities in on line 16, replace that language with negotiating for the sale of the power projects with. So the line would now read project divest itself of its interest in the four dam pool power projects by negotiating for the sale of the power projects with the communities served by the four dam pool power project.
Object.
There's objection, Representative Osterman.
Chairman, if you want to remove line 15 up to the comma after projects and then negotiate, insert negotiate, I'll accept that motion.
I'm sorry, I didn't follow that.
On line 15,
mm-hmm.
You two-thirds of the way through it, it says power projects. Line 15, comma. If you want to move up to that point and then put negotiate in.
So you're concerned about the open only?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Actually, Representative Osterman, I'd be willing to move a conceptual amendment and let the draft. It was not my intent to strike that. And let the drafters come up with whatever language works. Representative Davies had sent me a note suggesting language, preparing a letter requesting proposals for, and I just wasn't sure if the drafters would say, well, that's basically an RFP. And I'm just trying to get to negotiations with the communities that makes it clear it's not going to be, nor should it entail the cost of a full RFP. Representative Davies?
I mean, I thought it was very clear on the record from what Mr. Simmons said that the cost would be, if it were open broader than just the communities, it's the open only to that limits the cost of the RFP process. I mean, it's sort of a semantic issue. I think the fact issue that determines the cost is whether it's limited to the communities or not.
Okay. Representative Osterman, I would remove my amendment number 2 if you don't want to move something somewhat conceptually so we can have the drafters work out the language.
I will accept it as long as the words only open only to the electric utilities in the community. That was a discussion that we did have at the URS committee. The word only was put in there by that committee, and it highlights the issue that we are negotiating only with those utilities.
Okay, let me remove my proposed language, my motion, and just move a new amendment number two, which conceptually would change the language from an RFP to enter into negotiations with. And we'll leave it up to the drafters to come back with something that doesn't change the only language, and we can run it by you to make sure that it's okay. Is there objection to that new amendment number two? Moved conceptually. Okay, seeing none. Are there any other amendments to come before the committee?
Mr. Chairman.
And David?
Page 2, line 7 also refers to request for proposals.
That's right. And I would look at that as part of amendment number 2 to make the two conform with each other. Any objection to that? Okay, we will ask the drafter then to, as part of amendment number 2, make the language conform in the resolve there on page 2, line 6 and 7. So, Osterman.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to move that on page 2, lines 8 through 13 be struck.
Okay. Amendment number 3 is to delete the language on page 2, lines 8 through 13 in their entirety. I'm going to object to that. Would you like to speak to the amendment?
Mr. Chairman, as I spoke earlier, I would like to keep this as clean as possible. I think that that we can make that request to ADA without putting it in this resolution. I think it would have the same weight. It would come back with the same amount of information. I'd be willing to have a letter drafted from the Finance Committee if it makes you a little more comfortable with all of assigning it, requesting that information. So that if the utilities do not come to an agreement with ADA or AEA, that we then have some more information to work with.
Representative Krusendorf.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. This comes close to what happened last time when we opened it up for an RFP. It brought the several private groups to the negotiating table while the Four Dam Pool was negotiating. The other groups are sitting there listening and then filling out what they would do, and actually it became a problem. By removing this there, it indicates that they do not have a part in the negotiations, that the Four Dam Pool community can negotiate with ADA and without this saying, well, that they have a right to sit there as well and kibitz. So I would suggest that we remove this.
Representative Davis.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I can certainly understand wanting to keep it clean, but I I'm not so sure I disagree with the proposed amendment. It does not preclude anybody from the negotiations or offering letters of interest or probably offer as much input as they want to as towards a competitive effort, would be my understanding. Would that, Mr. Chairman, be your understanding also?
Well, Representative Davis, I guess my concern and my reason for objection to the motion is that we could also ask ADA to enter into negotiations through a letter too, or they could do it on their own and come to us with a proposal. If we through a resolution, formal resolution, are asking them to take that action, I would like to ask them to formally come back with an evaluation on how or if there can even be private participation. Because as I indicated earlier, for myself, in coming to a decision on whether we should sell and sell only to the communities involved, that's information that I'm going to want. And I think that's information that the legislature should have. Representative Bundy?
Well, I think we heard earlier testimony that if the state indicates an interest in only dealing with the affected communities, that there's no reason for private enterprise to spend the time and money to put together a proposal. So I have some concerns about we send that message. I think we also send the message to the communities that there's no competition, so there's no rush.
Any further discussion on the amendment? Seeing none, we'll have a roll call vote.
Okay, that's on the one I was just passed. On the list.
Deleting
8 through 13?
That's right.
Representative Griesendorf?
To delete, yes.
Representative Corey?
No.
Representative Moses?
No.
Nope. Representative Williams?
Yes.
Representative Osterman?
Yes.
Representative Bundy?
No.
Representative Davies?
Yes.
Representative Davis?
No.
Representative Foster?
No.
Representative Terrio?
No.
Representative Mulder?
No.
48, 7.
Here we have an additional amendment, amendment number 4, Representative Osterman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Amendment number 4 puts back into the CS the language that was struck off of page 1 of the URS resolution of the language, whereas speaking about what the power sales agreement really means, showing the significant liability to the state.
I am going to object to amendment number 4 for the discussion, Representative Davies.
Mr. Chairman, I support putting that back in. We've heard testimony from several people, that, and including the attorney for the Alaska Industry, or for AIDA, I guess, that these facts are exactly correct. And I think that they ought to be on the record.
Is there any further discussion? Okay, we'll have a roll call.
Representative Corey?
No.
Representative Moses?
Yes.
Representative Williams?
Yes.
Representative Osterman?
Yes.
Representative Bundy?
No.
Representative Davies?
Yes.
Representative Davis?